Doing Church, Keeping the Sacraments was presented by Nancy Scott on March 30th, 2004 at McKinsey Study Center's Tuesday night class. This is the first talk in part 3 of a series entitled Doing Christianity. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2004. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
This year we've been doing a series called Doing Christianity, and we've looked at several different aspects of what it looks like to do Christianity. This term is actually the most practical of the three terms, I guess you would say, or the more practical topics. And we're going to work this term at working out what does it look like to actually be a Christian. We're going to talk about cultural issues, different kinds of church practice issues, that kind of thing, this term. So, and I'm starting off tonight by talking about doing church and keeping the sacraments. So that's my topic tonight. I told Jack when I took on this topic that it might be dangerous because I actually do go to an Episcopal church now and then, and so I actually really appreciate the sacraments. But I do think that there are really some differences in how I tend to look at them and how we would look at them from a biblical perspective, and how a lot of church organizations and church history looks at them. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. But I also really want to talk about just kind of how we think about what church is and what it means that we go to church, because that too has been something that has been looked at a lot of different ways over the course of church history. And I'm certainly not going to like go through church history on it or anything. I'm just more going to talk about some of my own experiences with church and what I think we can take from Scripture to understand what we should, how we should be thinking about what church is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what it isn't and then about what it is. And in the midst of that, I'll add in a conversation about the sacraments. So kind of the lay. And then I'm actually anticipating a bit of time for a discussion. So if you have thoughts or ideas that you want to talk about more, be thinking about those. My experience going to the Episcopal Church is kind of a something that is not something I would have expected for myself. Several years ago, actually when I was a teenager, I was involved with an evangelical church. It was very active. And one Christmas Eve, a group of us went to, a friend of ours was Catholic, and there was an abbey near the high school where I went in Louisiana. And so for Christmas Eve, we went to the abbey for a midnight mass service. And I can remember very clearly sitting in the church for midnight mass and thinking that I was watching devil worship. I was completely aghast at what was I had never been in a Catholic church before. I didn't know anything about it. And I had a grid in place that said, this is not how you do church. And that, you know, they are worshiping idols and all this kind of thing. And so I came into that experience and was really, to not put too fine of a point on it, I was actually quite fearful to be there. I felt very afraid of what was happening and really wanted to bolt. I just wanted to get out of there. I had that memory as I was walking down toward the Eucharist service this past Sunday at the Episcopal Church, and I thought, boy, what a switch. But I began going to a Catholic church at Christmas time many years ago, probably 10 or 15 years ago, just at Christmas time. And that for me grew into an appreciation of the formality became something that I actually became very fond of. and the symbols and the liturgy and that kind of thing really grew on me. And then I switched to the Episcopal Church maybe 6 or 8 years ago and added some other services like Easter and some other Advent services before Christmas, that kind of thing. And now actually go periodically throughout the year, but mostly still on holidays. It strikes me, though, each time I go that a couple of things. One thing that I haven't tended to expect, and this is, again, I think from my background way back there, the grid I was coming into that first Catholic Church experience with, of they are so wrong that this just is, there aren't Christians here, almost. I mean, it was that extreme. And now I just continue to be struck by how much fellowship I have with the people that I've met and talked with at the Episcopal Church, and how much, whether we might agree on a lot of different points of how we would interpret Scripture, I don't know, but I sense a really common faith. And that has been really encouraging to me, to appreciate the bigness of God and His church in history, time, geography. God is really big, and He can He has people everywhere that are figuring it out and working to understand what their faith means. So, for some of us, going to church can be a delightful experience of connecting with the people that we care about and hearing teaching that encourages our faith. It can also be a reverent and symbolic experience that gives occasion for pause and remembering in that way. But for others, it's actually a dreaded ordeal where their experience of church has been one of really being beaten over the head with how bad they're doing and how much better they could be doing at serving God if they just performed better and got the rules down. So there's a whole lot of different experiences and a lot of different types of churches out there and a lot of baggage that we all carry along with us. So, for example, a friend of mine who grew up Catholic really is just not able to do what I do at the Episcopal Church because of her experience in that context, which was actually very hurtful to her on a more personal, emotional level than necessarily even on a theological level. So anyway, another friend of mine recently went through a difficult experience in her church and asked me to kind of think about it with her, kind of what is church. She's been at a church for many, many years, and there was an experience where the pastor kind of ran afoul of the governing body in some way and was eventually asked to leave amidst various charges and also just some confusion in the church about the role that he was not performing well enough in terms of church building and healing some splits that had happened in that church, different things. And so he was asked to leave. And this was really difficult for my friend who saw the divisions that came up through that and all the splitting that started to happen in these relationships. And it really caused her to reconsider what she thought about what church was. So, and I think so often these days, church is very much like a business. It's run like it's an institution, organization. It has programs. It has funds, building committees, all kinds of things that they're doing. And even in a lot of the teaching, I think we're moved toward trying to understand, going to church to understand something about God that's manageable so that we can kind of understand who God is and kind of make this work for us somehow. And it's as if you don't go do that, then you're going to be missing something or you're not going to be receiving God's grace in the same way that you would if you did go. So, and I think this is where sermons like How to Have Success in Prayer, there's this whole mindset of things that we do to achieve success in different ways in our lives that are very much the focus of a lot of churches these days. So a lot of churches today sincerely work to foster an environment that encourages a deeper experience of God or a deeper understanding of God. And a lot of churches talk about how we can provide the various services that people have come to expect church to provide for them. It's very churches need to be user-friendly. You hear about felt needs and that kind of thing. So it's gotten to be so different than what I think the biblical authors had in mind or what their practices even were. Then you have other movements that try to go back and recreate what was it like in the first century, and maybe that's the model for doing church. But I think that really the heart of a church, of any church, is the people who are bound by a common faith and a common set of beliefs and a common goal of understanding the gospel and understanding what it means to live out our faith together. If that's really the bottom line of what church is a community of believers getting together to encourage one another in their faith through teaching or any other things that they find encouraging, like the sacraments or whatever, then it occurs to me that church can really look a lot of different ways, and there really isn't a right way or a wrong way to do church. So what church isn't, I think, is a set of prescribed ordinances and services and practices that are biblically prescribed. And there are a lot of churches out there who very firmly believe that they are following an order of service, even that a lot of the Reformed tradition does this, where right out of the Westminster Confession, it's very clear what a service is supposed to look like and what components it's supposed to have, or else without those, we're disobeying God. So I'll go out on a limb and say I don't think that that's actually the deal, that that there's any kind of one way of doing church that is better than any other way. Now, what the Westminster Confession was responding to, I think, had its place in history in terms of trying to outline what practices were helpful and what practices were not helpful. They were cutting through centuries of church corruption during the Reformation and figuring out what could stay and what needed to go. And I think they did a really good job of doing that. Perhaps they didn't go far enough, but I think that the way they were responding to that, it makes sense out of what they came up with. But I think now it's important that we maybe go even further and say, especially in the culture that we live in, which is there's just so many different subcultures and things that are meaningful to people, that as I'm going to argue in a minute, I think that what church actually is, as I've said, is this community of people of faith who are working to come together and encourage one another in their faith, and that can be done in a lot of different ways. We are forgetful people. The heart of the gospel is clear that we are in desperate need of God's mercy and that we need to be reminded. And I see that model in the Old Testament quite often, where God is taking the people of Israel through different experiences and he has them do something to memorialize his deliverance of them. Like when they came over the Jordan River and they were instructed to put stones down, and these were memorial stones to remind them that God had brought them across the Jordan River. It's things like that that I picture as, and my own experience of how forgetful I can be about just who God is in the natural course of life and busyness. It's easy to not be thinking about who God is and what that means in my life. And so having practices that actually help me remember what I believe, I think, can be really helpful. And but I want to make a contrast between an idea that says that's helpful to be reminded versus this is a means of grace that I need to be doing these things in order for God to be sanctifying me, working in my life, bringing me to maturity. So, what do we need to be reminded of? I think that there are a lot of things that we could be reminded of. Certainly that God is God and that He is good. I think during the course of our lives, it's easy to wonder whether or not God is committed to our well-being, especially when trials and difficulties come. It gets harder and harder to remember that when we're challenged in that way. And certainly having a community of faith to come alongside us and encourage us and remind us that God is for us is a very helpful, good gift to give each other. We need to be reminded that God's promises are true, that there's a kingdom coming where this sin that we live with is going to be fixed finally. That God forgives us, that Jesus' offering of Himself on the cross was accepted, and that God grants us mercy, that God loves us and is committed to our sanctification. All these things are things that are reminders, or are good reminders to encourage us along our way. So, how can we be reminded of these things? A lot of different ways. As I said before, I don't think a particular church practice is as significant as finding things that are meaningful to the group of people that are getting together. So if singing a particular set of songs is meaningful, that's fine. Certainly, the idea of having the Bible present, I think, is pretty basic in terms of giving us a perspective and an understanding of God's view of things that encourages us to trust Him and to understand what it is that He's doing in history and in our lives. So church in whatever form it takes. This is where I was going to talk for a minute about sacraments. I'm not going to talk a lot about it because I actually did a lot of reading about different traditions and that kind of thing, but the more I read, the less I felt like I knew or understood much of it. So I don't really know that it's necessarily the scope of tonight to go through this thorough thing about the sacraments, but I do want to say that most traditions look at the sacraments, particularly the Lord's Supper and Communion, as something that is essential to a body of Christians gathering together, and something that's essential as a means of grace. And what they often mean by that is that that partaking of the ceremony actually, there's a mystery that happens. They talk a lot about mystery, and this mystery that happens is that the symbol that represents a reality, that there's a relationship between the symbol and what is symbolized, that we step into a mystery there and actually receive God's grace in the midst of partaking of that symbol. Does that make sense? Is that something that's familiar to all of you guys because you've been taught it in church? I think that that the difficulty with that is the inconsistency of understanding that our sanctification is really up to God, and yet here's this practice that we're supposed to do that's going to be really significant in moving us toward being sanctified. And even the reformers, I think, were very inconsistent on this. And even now, I have a good friend who is very much have a background in being in Reformed theology, and she was saying the same thing, that she hears that all the time, and that people will argue about how it's not a work because it's inconsistent to actually say it's a work, But the fact is, there, the way the Westminster Confession is worded, the way it's interpreted, it's always interpreted as this is a means of grace, and it's essential in the practice of our faith to be doing this. So it's inconsistent at best. And I think that if we really understand grace and understand what Paul talked about in various places in the New Testament as grace, it can only be one or the other. It really can't be both at the same time, if you know what I mean. It's if God is in charge of our salvation and our sanctification, then He is in charge of it. And while there can be things that we are responsible for, certainly the moral choices that we make are part of what shows up that we have a heart that wants what God wants and that's trusting Him and following Him. I would argue that the work of the Spirit, the work of grace, precedes anything like that. So you have this work of grace happening, and then the desire to pursue righteousness, the desire to be encouraged by a symbol that represents Jesus' sacrifice, those things come after the grace. So it isn't that we're going to go there and participate in this observance in order to get grace, but rather because we have received grace, those things become meaningful to us and become an encouragement to our faith. So, any questions so far? Thoughts, ideas? Okay. I think that the biggest thing that God uses to show us, to show Himself to us, and to bring us to maturity, to sanctification, is actually not particular worship ceremonies or practices that we do. I think more often He uses relationships and life experiences. The Westminster Confession does allow for that. They're called the providences. And that's where trials and suffering come in, as ordained by God for our good. So I think that for me is the broader picture, because it seems to me that the natural organic process of our lives, where we get confronted with what we really believe and what we're really going to hold to, is in the day-to-day life living in the context of relationships and the choices that we make. So surrounding ourselves with a community that supports those choices, I think, can be important, but I don't think it's essential, in the sense that that God is not able to bring me to maturity apart from any of those practices or encouragement. But I do think He normally uses relationships and life experiences. For example, I think what this speaks to is that we are so good at being blind and not seeing our own sinfulness, that it strikes me that in the midst of life where we see our need for mercy and understand that God is who is giving mercy, that's where we grow and continue to trust God in the midst of life as it gets crazy, or as it's mundane. So I had a recent experience where I saw this happen. I have a good friend who I was traveling with. Some of you guys know that I did an adventure recently, and one of my old friends from college is now an eco-tour leader, and she is someone that I go way back with, and we were best friends in college, and we have really different life experiences now, very different life experiences. I've lived in the same place for 15 years, and she's pretty much on a different continent about every 2 months. But got a call from the airport today. She's on her way to Brazil today. So anyway, we were in another country having an adventure together, and something happened early on in the trip that kind of tripped us up, and we were very distant from each other during most of this trip. And when we finally talked about it, almost 2 weeks had passed, the trip was almost over, and we had not really reconnected our friendship at all. And this was the first time I'd been around her in 5 years. It was really important to both of us that we were going to be on this trip together. And as we finally began to talk about what had happened, it was very clear that she had been hurt by something I had done early in the trip, that once she told me about it, I could understand her interpretation of what I had done, even though from where I was, I had no idea. I mean, I didn't intend how she interpreted what happened was not my intention at all. I had no idea that it could even be interpreted that way. So it was a really unfortunate misunderstanding. And as a result, as I would try to move toward her, I felt a real wall from her, and I would back away. And so there were things that she did in response to being hurt that in turn I interpreted a certain way. See how this is going, right? And in the end, we completely missed. We missed each other entirely and didn't have much of a connection at all for this 2 weeks, for this 2 week period. And so when we were finally talking about it, it was really clear to both of us how silly it was on the one hand, but also how profoundly we have hurt each other over time in the course of our friendship. And that the interpretations that each of us gave to the other's actions made sense in the context of other past hurts and experiences that we'd had together. So we ended up in this conversation where we put it all out there and started talking about lots of history and lots of experiences and lots of hurting. And I think what was the most clear to me in that moment was how much my having been hurt by my friend had influenced how I responded to her in a way that I couldn't see how she might be hurt. And it was so apparent to me that my own hurt had blinded me to that. And it felt like the enormous tragedy that it is. And especially, I think, because this was a really big deal to be on this trip, and we had lost it. We had lost the trip in terms of having it together. So it was just a really big loss. And as I experienced that hurting and also then hearing how much she had been hurt, when here I'm thinking I'm the one that had been hurt, it was incredibly sobering. And it was also incredibly amazing and healing to connect on it and to forgive each other and to affirm our friendship and to talk about the regret that we shared about that whole experience. I think that that's the kind of thing that we're faced with in our most common relationships, not just the ones we see every 5 years, but in the ones where we interact day in and day out and have an opportunity to see ourselves as people who, when we're hurt, respond in ways that are hurtful. So it's that kind of thing where God is taking me through this process of life, showing me my heart and showing me his mercy, and also encouraging me to trust the promises that one day that's what's going to be fixed about me, that I will actually get a new heart, one that doesn't respond that way when I'm hurt. So that's the ultimate promise of the gospel, not that we will have power over our sin here and now, or that we will have a particular church experience and experience a different level of spiritual existence as a result of it, but rather that God's Spirit uses our most mundane life experiences to help us recognize our own sin and understand our need for mercy. So a church, then, is a community of people who share a perspective on that and also share a commitment to encourage one another as we stumble and blunder our way through this life all the way to the kingdom. So by God's grace, which we can't procure by doing any particular ceremony or service, our failures will serve to secure our hope in the promise and to grow our trust in Him to get us there. And as a gracious gift, He may also give us a community of people with whom we can go through that process. I want to close with a quote from kind of a condensed quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, his book Life Together. Just as surely as God desires to lead us to a knowledge of genuine Christian fellowship, so surely must we be overwhelmed by a great disillusionment with others, with Christians in general, and if we are fortunate, with ourselves. By sheer grace, God will not permit us to live even for a brief period in a dream world. Only that fellowship which faces such disillusionment, with all its unhappy and ugly aspects, begins to grasp in faith the promise that is given to it. Even when sin and misunderstanding burden the communal life, is not the sinning brother still a brother, with whom I too stand under the word of Christ? Will not his sin be a constant occasion for me to give thanks that both of us may live in the forgiving love of God in Jesus Christ? Thus the very hour of disillusionment with my brother becomes incomparably salutary, because it so thoroughly teaches me that neither of us can live by our own words and deeds, but only by that one word and deed which really binds us together, the forgiveness of sins in Jesus Christ. Questions, thoughts, comments? How's the temperature now? Any better? Jeff? The microphone? There we go. Thank you. Is it on?
Is it on?
Yes.
It is. Okay. All right. So regarding, having attended a few Episcopalian services myself, usually communion had, in other churches, been passed around. And yet, for me, the symbolism of being of standing up and kind of standing in this bread line, and then kneeling down and not even able to use my own hands, needing to open my mouth and have this wafer put on, and the priest says specifically, "This is the body of Christ given for you." And then here's the cup, and it like reminds me so deeply of my helplessness. So indeed I don't look at that as being okay, well now I'm really right with God, but rather wow, big huge exclamation point reminder for me.
Thank you, Brian. I'm going to turn these heaters off because now I can hardly
You were talking about how there's really not a right way to do church or a wrong way to do church, but that what's important is that it has meaning for you. And I mean, I agree with that. But I was just wondering that since our culture is very much emphasizes just doing what's good for you and just what makes you feel good, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know you would see a line there, but I was just wondering, where would you put that line? And I was specifically thinking about this because I've gone to numerous churches, and you know, always after a few weeks, I become impressed with the fact that no church is perfect, and that they all have...
humans?
Yeah, they all have humans, unfortunately, and I'm one too. And sometimes it's hard for me to decide, is this the kind of imperfection that just you have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
And, or is it the kind of imperfection where you know, it warrants going someplace else. And so I'm just wondering, like, where would someone draw the line between why I like this because it has meaning for me versus I like this because it gives me a meaningful, good feeling experience kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, because at some point you kind of just have to face certain things which don't really give you meaning and they make you feel uncomfortable, but they might actually be good for you,
mm-hmm.
and that it causes you to recognize that there's other perspectives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where do you think the line would fit there?
Well, I think that the choice of the word reminding me is key there, because I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, I think anything that's meaningful is okay on the one hand, but it ought to be reminding me of something that's actually true. So that's where I would put the line. If does that make sense? It's like, it's not just about having an experience that I like and enjoy, but it's about reminding me about what's true and leading me toward what is true. So in that sense, the Episcopal experience of the symbol of communion reminding me about Christ's sacrifice and it being accepted, and like Jeff was sharing, the kind of the awesomeness of that reality, that that's a reminder of something that's actually true. And so it can have meaning that's helpful, encouraging in my faith.
So that just made me think about something. So would it be, usually people go to church because there's something about it that they like and they're going for it for that, mm-hmm. that reason. Do you think it would also be maybe even equally important to go to a church where, yeah, there's something there that has meaning for you, but there's something there that you know will cause you to have to constantly, every single time, question, why am I going here again?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just get mm-hmm. too comfortable, but you have to always face something about yourself that church brings out.
I think that kind of just will happen because of being human. And trying to be together in a group. In other words, suppose I find a church that I think is actually everything that, you know, I say, I get a blank piece of paper and say, this is what a church would look like that I would really like to be a part of. And then I go out and I find that church. And it really is what it promises to be, and I'm really encouraged by it. And I begin to build relationships and community there and find that I'm among like-minded believers. I'm thinking of my own experience at our church here, Reformation. This is my experience of that church. It's very much what I wanted it to look like a lot. And my sense is that even in that context, there will always be things that challenge us because we are called to be together in this process. And just like what Bonhoeffer is talking about, that process is that we're going to fail each other. And we're going to be confronted with what does that mean about the promises of the gospel. So even in the perfect church, if I found the perfect church in terms of what I like the best, for example, there's always going to be that. Is that?
Yeah, that helps. Thanks.
I know you didn't want to talk about the sacraments a whole lot, but I had a question about how much you'd see all of them as reminders, because, like, how much are they, like, commanded in any sense, and, like, how much are they just, well, if I want to take communion, then, and I think it's a good thing, then I'll do it, or do we have to, or, like, baptism, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll just talk about communion a little bit, because that seems to be the big one. The origin of communion in the New Testament even was the Passover. And one of the things that's striking to me is as the church was started and as the different apostles passed the teaching along, I noticed more of a lack of prescribing a particular religious order than I do. And I think it's really interesting and significant that a lot of these guys were Jewish, and of all things, the Jewish religious traditions were ordained by God, I mean, pretty clearly for the Old Testament. these were the ordained practices, including Passover, for example. And I find it really intriguing that rather than prescribing those same practices for the new beginning church, they actually went to bat with each other over how much they weren't going to require Gentiles to participate in different things that were given for Jewish people. They also weren't going to require that the Jewish people give up their religion. So it really strikes me that the New Testament picture is that we're free with respect to religion. We can either pick it up or we can put it down. Now that said, take something like the Lord's Supper, and is it commanded? I don't think it is. If you really look at the passages that that have reference to the Lord's Supper, the passages in the Gospels where Jesus is actually, where it's the historical account of him instituting it, he's when it says, "This do in remembrance of me," we've taken that as kind of a command that says we're supposed to be doing this. But in the context, what he's doing is he's taking the Passover meal and reinterpreting it for his disciples and the Christians to come. And he's saying, from now on, when you do this, do it remembering me. Rather than remembering the Exodus, do it remembering me. So he wasn't saying, do it. He was saying, if you do it this way. Do it remembering me, rather than, he's like making it fuller. And then when Paul talks about passing the tradition down, I think it's a similar kind of thing where they had become, they had developed a practice that was related to that event and that experience, and he was commenting on how they were doing that practice. And so in the context of that passage, he's saying, if you're going to be doing this practice, do it with pure hearts. In other words, don't take it lightly and be evil with each other about it, excluding one another and, you know, getting drunk or whatever, all this other stuff that was going on there. He's again saying, if you're going to do this, do it in this way. But I don't think that there's anywhere that actually prescribes this is what you ought to be doing. And I think that's where there's been a lot of misunderstanding about the role of the sacraments, for example. Now, that said, we have 2,000 years of history of the practice of communion. And as such, there's all kinds of traditions that have come along and have been carried along. And one of the things that I find meaningful in the observance of communion is that connection to a faith that goes all the way back. It's not just the faith of this community I'm doing it with right here and now and standing up in public in this culture that thinks Christianity is nuts anyway and saying, I believe this thing. But I'm actually standing up with 2,000 years of a common faith. And that's significant. I mean, so in that sense, I think certain practices are meaningful to us culturally and can remind us, be helpful to remind us about what's true and symbolize certain things because of the way they've been handed down to us in culture. But I don't think that means that they serve as a means of grace or that they are required for maturity or sanctification. Did that get at what you were asking?
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. Anybody know how the basketball game's going? I know. If you did, you wouldn't be here, right? Thanks for coming. And we'll see you next week.